In this season preview, we'll be chatting about testing in Bahrain, who's looked good, who didn't. Also, is Ferrari about to make a comeback? Oh my God, please, yes. And how Cadillac is shaping up, and is the Newey era of dominance over?
It's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to Away We Go podcast. I'm Diane Bortoletto, a pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm back in Perth. This year, Formula One hits reset with the biggest rules overhaul in well over a decade. Smaller, lighter, narrower cars completely reimagine the aerodynamics with active aero instead of the old DRS and power units with roughly 50-50 split between electric and combustion as Formula One embraces advanced sustainable fuels. From strategic overtaking tools like overtake and boost, and we'll get into that about what that means, to a whole new era of energy management, 2026 is shaping up to be a season unlike any other. Now, before we jump into this episode, I just want to say that the stats show only about 10% of everyone who listens and watches this podcast has subscribed. So please hit the subscribe button. It'll really help this podcast be seen by more people. It would mean the world to us if you could subscribe. Kira Gillen and I have invited her partner in life and business, Simone Scanu, to help us unpack what this all means for the season ahead. Simone and Kira are the co-founders of our favorite real-time Formula One data and telemetry app, Formula Life Pulse. This is what you need to have open on your phone or your second screen for every session of every Formula One, and now Formula 2, Formula 3, and Formula 1 Academy session. Welcome back, Kira, and welcome back to the show, Simone. Good to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
So this season, wow, we've got a lot going on. Where to start? Simone, we've got really no idea of which teams are going to be dominant and which teams are not going to be dominant. It's like a clean slate, which is massively exciting for Formula One fans.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the main thing that we have to think about is the fact that there are three new, completely new engines on the grid. So we have Red Bull with four powertrain, and then we have Audi, and then we have Honda again. The last one is probably one of the most spoken out about the fact that so far they're not doing really well, unfortunately, which is a shame because, you know, they have a reputation in Formula One. Definitely one of the point of discussion is Honda and Aston Martin. They are not doing really well at the moment. After the testing between Barcelona and Bahrain, in two sessions in Bahrain, they were only able to perform 2,000 kilometers, I think, which is very low compared to another team like Audi, which basically they did 5,000 kilometers, something like that. So to do like a comparison with another team that they only have one engine on the grid. Then we have, you know, Red Bull, that they have at least four engines that were able to do over 10,000 kilometers. And then, of course, you have the top team, Ferrari and Mercedes, they were able to do over 20,000 kilometers at the end.
Scary for them.
Yeah.
And out of those teams in testing, I mean, we saw, like, every Ferrari fan is just sitting here just praying that Ferrari might be back, given that they seemed to perform pretty well in Bahrain. What's your take on the teams that perform well in testing? And can we look at testing and really get a gauge of how a team's going to perform? Or, this is what I think, that the teams are doing exactly that. They're testing. They're trying different setups, different rear wings, and we need to talk about Ferraris. So I don't know whether it's a true indication of how they're going to perform. I mean, what do you think?
I mean, yes and no. Yes, from one point of view, you can see like the downside sometimes, like with Honda and Aston Martin, you can see that there is a problem. They actually admit it. There is a problem. There are a lot of vibration that is actually breaking our batteries. And they don't really know at the moment. I don't know if by today they already discovered what is the real cause of the issue. But there is an issue. For other teams, is, I don't know, it feels like sometimes, like during tests, especially the top team, they're playing hide and seek. Ferrari, definitely, they don't want to hide quite anything in terms of aerodynamics. In terms of engine, we don't know. We don't know the fuel loads. We don't know how hard they were pushing their engine. We have no idea. But a good thing about Ferrari was reliability so far, because they were able to use the same exact engine in Barcelona and during Bahrain first session of testing. So that's a very good sign for a team.
Yeah, there was lots of talk that the teams were sandbagging, you know, means putting extra weight in the car so their true speed wasn't being shown. But the Ferrari's rear wing, so when the rear wing opens, it usually just tilts a certain number of degrees, opens up, if you like, goes from a flat surface to open up to let the wind pass through. But Ferrari's did a full kind of 180 and the top of the wing was arching up. Now, to me, that looked like a stroke of genius, engineering genius. Why hasn't every other team done that? Do you think that's played a significant role in perhaps them looking so good in testing?
I mean, during testing, unfortunately, we haven't seen that wing that much. I think it was just like 5 laps or something. So, right. Which makes you think, like, after 5 laps, they were able to see that it's just not good, or they just didn't want other teams to see much of it. But they already said that they're not going to bring this wing in Australia. They're probably going to bring this wing in a specific track like Baku and Monza. But it's definitely genius. We haven't seen any other teams doing something like that. Like, they were able to, like, rotating the wing 180 degrees, they're able basically to create a bigger gap. So it's just pure genius. The most genius part was actually the exhaust wing. That was actually really genius. I don't know if you guys saw that. But
What's that? Explain to us what it is.
They position a very small wing, a small piece of bodywork that is positioned just behind the exhaust. And what this does, it is able to use the gas of the exhaust to redirect basically the airflow to the rear wing. This is something that it was used like 2010, I think, and then it was banned. And it's something that is actually really hard to replicate from the team. Like, the rear wing is something that they can easily replicate. But this particular piece of bodywork is really hard to replicate because it's basically connected to the way that the gearbox differential has been created and is being positioned. So if you don't know, like, the right size of the engine gearbox and differential and the way that it's positioned, it's really, really hard to replicate. So this could be actually something really interesting that they were going to see this year, because according to motorsport.com, Ferrari has a half second advantage among the field just thanks to this.
Ferrari engineering it's what legends have been built on. So I'm not surprised that I am surprised that they're the only team that have thought about that. And the other thing we need to talk about is the fuel. So the sustainable fuel that the teams are obligated to use, is it correct that 50% of the fuel makeup has to come from waste products, like waste food products? Is that right?
It is correct. I mean, it is part of the Formula One commitment to reaching net zero by 2030. And so far, they are on the good path. You know, they're going to do it. In terms of fuel, it is true. The fuel is made by cutting edge sources like municipal waste, they say, and also non-food biomass. So, yeah, it is certified to meet these strict sustainability standards.
I'm kind of surprised to know that it's not something that every team has to have the same fuel provider, same way every team has the same tire provider. You know, that there could be areas where you could actually develop a little bit more with that. Interesting.
Yeah, so Pirelli are the only tyre provider in Formula One and have been for several years. And we've got to give a shout out to Mario Isola, who is Mr. Pirelli, like the head of Pirelli Formula One Motorsport, who has stepped aside to take a leading management role with ARCI. It's like the Automobile Club of Italia. Yes. Congratulations, Mario. You will be missed on the grid walks, and I see your face on TV. So I work with Mario at Rally d'Italia Sardegna in 2007, 2008, when he was with Pirelli then, but for the World Rally Championship. He's been there for a long time in Formula One.
Right? Yeah. I have a question for Simone, just going back to the exhaust thing. Because Simone, you said that originally it was banned. Do you know what Ferrari had? I mean, obviously you don't know the ins and outs, but I'm curious about what Ferrari might have done to create something that's going to give them an advantage, but is not illegal. Because if it was illegal before, you know, that it was banned.
Well, basically what they did, they created a specific gearbox differential that is actually a little bit shorter And the way that it's positioned, they were able to use the 16 millimeters that they had, you know, the spare one, to basically put this small piece of bodywork. This is what they did. And again, it's not really easy to replicate, because if you want to replicate, it means that you have to build a complete new gearbox. And it takes, depends by the team, but it could take 2 to 3 months. So, you know, you're already half a season before you can make.
Wow. Interesting. Well, I mean, I'm holding out that hope that Ferrari have found an edge over everybody else. I mean, long time coming.
It's been a long time coming. I mean, some fans might not remember that Ferrari were really dominant in the 2000s, weren't they? Michael Schumacher was just winning everything, and it was just amazing. But that hasn't happened for a long time. So, yeah, it's looking good so far. Who else is looking good, do you think, Simone?
Well, I will never discredit Max, to be honest. You know, it doesn't matter, like, what kind of car he has. Like, we saw it last year. He just, like Zak Brown said, he's kind of like the bad guy in the horror movies. He's just coming back, you know, all the time.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Max is just in another league, isn't he? You can never rule him out. He will just get the maximum out of whatever he's driving to with his eye on the prize, which is the top step. That's what he wants.
100%. Yeah. And I always find when Max is complaining, it means people are working much harder behind the scenes to make things good. So if he's saying this is like formerly Eon Speed, they're working hard to make sure he's happy.
Actually, speaking of that, Simone, maybe you can explain how battery is going to work in this new era. I have seen a lot of chatter about people saying this is going to be more about battery management than it is about racing. Can you explain to us how that works?
Well, it is. It definitely, the driver that is able to master the energy in the best way possible is going to have an advantage. I believe that probably the younger generation is able to master this a little bit better. So basically what Formula One have done before the power unit, they had two components that were able to recover energy in a different way. MGUK, where the K stands for kinetic, is the component that recover energy under braking. And that is actually sustained. What they removed is the MGUH, where the H stands for heat. So it was a way that they were able to recover energy with the flow of the exhaust gases. And now they removed this component because regardless of the fact that it was really, really effective, this component was quite complicated to manage. It was a complicated system. It's been there since 18 years. But now they decided to remove it. But at the same time, people might think, oh, okay, so they're going to have less energy. And they're like, no, because now the energy would be split at 50-50 between the combustion engine and the hybrid part. Technically, the engines are more powerful. The problem would be how long the battery are going to last. Because we have seen during testing, I think there is an onboard of the Audi engine, and literally in the middle of the straight, they were like reaching the super clipping. And it's just like battery was completely at 0%. And just like, what are we watching? You know? And it was really disappointing from that point of view.
If the battery just runs out, if they're not, for example, if they're not needing to brake very much, they can take corners quickly without hitting brakes, if there's long straights, if they're not recharging the battery with energy, if the battery runs out, like, will the combustion engine kick in or will the car just stop? And do they need battery? Oh, sorry, I've got so many questions about this battery. I don't really understand how it's going to work.
I'm just picturing the car stopping in the middle of the, like, someone's being chased or the car just stops. And it's like, oh my, that's why I was laughing.
Oh, I mean, definitely the car won't stop. But what's going to happen is that you're going to have like this boost at the very beginning when you exit a corner. And then like in the middle of the straight, you're not going to have the support of the electrical power. And then basically the engine won't be able to keep the same amount of RPM. So you can see in the telemetry, you can literally see that in the middle of the straight, the driver is still at 100% of throttle, but you see the RPM that they go down. And that's the sign that the battery actually is going really low. So they don't have more support from the hybrid system.
It's going to be the master of the energy. Like, I don't even know how the way to phrase that correctly, but it's not just going to be about the ability to drive fast and you know, take corners quickly, as you said, Dan, but like, it's going to be very much about the whole package and how you can manage it. Can I ask why you think it's the younger drivers who are going to be better at that? Is it just familiarity or?
Good question.
I think they're just more able to adapt to these kind of changes. And I think these kind of challenges are more like, it feels like more video game, you know, whatever they're doing, because you have to really manage energy. You have to use a lot of lifting costs more than before. We heard lifting costs last year, specifically to Ferrari a lot, but this year is going to be something that is going to be really, really popular among all teams, because if you want to recharge the battery, there is no other way. You have to lift the pedal.
You think we'll see less battles as a result of this?
I mean, I think that on paper, it's going to be the opposite. Because if I have to lift and coast multiple times earlier than before to recharge my battery, so I'm able to defend, technically, we should see more fighting, you know, because you're lifting and I'm getting closer to you. So I'm going to have a chance in the straight. And then, of course, there is also like the thing about the overtake mode that it's also very controversial, because you have to use overtake mode strategically during the races. You have to use it in a specific part of the track where you know that after that, there's going to be like a couple of corners. So you're able to defend, because once you use overtake mode, you're not going to have any more battery. So you have to be able to defend. So I have to be like, it's a strategic game, to be honest.
Yeah, so with the lift and coast, I thought that was to save fuel, but is lifting and coasting also recharging the battery?
Yes, that's correct. It uses the same system of the streetcar, you know, so that it basically uses kinetic energy to recover energy. So that's why this year is going to be more prominent.
Okay, and boost mode and overtake mode, what's the difference between those two?
Well, Formula One or FIA or whoever, they, since the very beginning when they announced this new regulation, I think they made a lot of confusion. Like, people are still so confused, even though during testing I saw that with all the graphics and they, like, at every session they were explaining, but it's sometimes it's really hard to understand. So boost is something that in Formula One has been there since forever. Okay, so there are several cases where you can hear like the engineer saying, hey, overtake enabled. Okay, overtake enabled is just like a different map in the engine for every driver is different, where they can press that button and they can use it to have a little bit more power to overtake. So that doesn't change. That is something that they can use it whatever they want, you know, when they think that it's the time to deploy that energy. While overtake mode is... it's something new that is actually what is replacing DRS, let's say, because it's something that you can use only when you are within 1 second behind the driver that is in front of you. And that basically what it does, it gives you an extra boost. So it's able to deploy, I think it's 0.5 megajoules more. So you have additional electrical power. So that's why I was saying it's really something that you might want to use strategically before a series of corner after that. Because if you overtake, then you're going to be probably run out of battery.
Right. So you wouldn't use boost and overtake together to get like really...
That's exactly what I was going to ask too. Is it a compound effect? Like if you use them both, can you use them both?
Maybe. I mean, if you're brave enough, maybe you can use both.
Or if you're stupid enough, because as you're saying, you're going to have nothing afterwards.
I mean, I always think about, you know... It feels like Fast and the Furious movies, you know, the first ones, you know, where you see these people like pressing two buttons on the steering wheel and they have a huge boost. Yeah, pretty much. That's going to be it.
Oh, that's so funny. Look, I feel really sorry for the commentary team who have got to commentate this season and get all of these complicated new systems communicated in a really clear and simple way and consistent way throughout every race for fans to understand, because, you know, I would call us all diehard Formula One fans and, you know, but we're not engineers. Like, well, certainly I'm not. It's going to be hard for the commentators to get a grip of. I reckon it'd be interesting. Yeah, Australia is going to be interesting to watch.
It is.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Speaking of Australia, there's a lot of activity going on in the Middle East at the moment with bombings and whatnot. I'm hearing that the Australian Grand Prix is on track, on schedule, but that there is some rerouting of freight and personnel to go through Asia and some through the US, even the long way round to come to Australia to avoid the Middle East, because, of course, Dubai Airport has shut down. I think Qatar Airport is still closed as well. Let's hope that everyone and everything can get here safely and not delay the start of the season, because I'm so excited for it.
No, right? It's mad, because I don't know where we were at the weekend, but it's when it happened, when they started kind of bombing all these American bases. Somebody was like, oh my God, this is going to, you know, impact. And I was like, no, no way. But actually, when you think about it, we watched a great video last year about the logistics of Formula One and how they move all the different kind of freights and how they, you know, go from one race to another and they have to kind of move at different points and et cetera. And there's huge logistics. And the Middle East is really central to that. And weren't they supposed to do a tire test in Bahrain that they had to cancel? So yeah, it's really hoping now that I mean, obviously hoping everything is well in the Middle East, but also really hoping that this doesn't impact it and that everybody gets off on Sunday. Well, Saturday, it's Friday.
Definitely, yeah. Everyone's in place ready for Friday. And also, speaking of Australia, want to give a quick shout out to the Australian Grand Prix Corporation for this awesome initiative, first of its kind in Formula One history. So another groundbreaking innovation from Australia, because they invented grid kits, don't forget. So Australia was the first to bring in grid kits. So they've got a corner named after two prominent women who work in Formula One, Laura Mueller, who's the race engineer for the TGR Haas Formula One team, Esteban Ocon's race engineer, and Hannah Schmitz, who's the head of race strategy for Red Bull Racing. And they've named a corner in her corner, which is Turn 6 at Albert Park, after these two women. That's also in celebration of International Women's Day, which happens to fall on the day of the Grand Prix. So, yay, go Australia. We love this forward thinking and putting women in the spotlight.
Yeah, that's great. That is great. And more women in motorsports. That's all we want.
Absolutely.
More recognition as well.
Exactly. More recognition for all the great work that women do. You were saying before, Simone, that Honda have not got the hours on their run sheet for testing that we hoped. And Adrian Newey has been talked up for 18 months with this new car, and it's not looking great for Aston Martin. Like, is the Newey era over? What do you think?
I mean, a genius is always a genius.
Says the genius.
I don't really know, to be honest. It's not the first time Adrian Newey didn't produce a winning car out of the box. It takes time, but it's true that they are running some difficulties at the moment, not only related to the engine, but also related to the aerodynamics, because we have seen that car out on track for just a little, but when we saw it, it was just unstable. So yeah, tough time.
It is a tough time.
I mean, obviously everybody's very excited about Ferrari and it's all great, but I just bang on about the fact that it's a 24 race season and it is very much about the updates that you bring. And if you look at, you know, like there was, what was it, 2-3 years ago that Aston Martin started and they were not winning races, but Alonso was on the podium, and then they didn't bring any, the updates they brought completely destroyed their car and then they were nowhere. So in my head, I'm like, okay, if you're not doing well now, there's time for you to improve and to change and bring updates. And it's very much about those updates that you bring. So I think it's all, yeah, I mean, it's not good for them at the moment. I'm sure they're very stressed and very worried, but I do think there's time, obviously, you know, it'd be exciting to see.
Yes. And look, I would hate to see, if this is Fernando Alonso's last season, I would hate to see him end it with a car that just wasn't competitive at all. So let's hope you're right. Let's hope that they are able to step it up and bring some upgrades. And, you know, the instability of the car might have been fixed now. We don't know. Testing is testing, like I said before, because they are, you know, looking for things to improve on. But I've only got one rookie on the grid this season, Arvid Lindblad with Racing Bulls. From six rookies last season to one this season, it's kind of feel a little bit sorry for him. He's like the new kid on the block all by himself.
Yeah, right? It's got to be a little bit lonely, but hopefully the other guys, you know, because they were rookies only just last year, that they'll be a little bit kind of supportive of him and be able to kind of, you know, hold his hand a little bit. Who's his partner? Liam Lawson, right? So, I mean, Liam Lawson's been up and down that track. So hopefully, you know, I'd have a bit of compassion for Arvid. But he seems like an exciting driver, you know, one to watch.
Yeah, I don't really know anything about him besides that he's British with Swedish heritage. I think that's right.
Yeah, he has been described kind of like Heiser Kajar last year. He just wants to learn. He wants to improve. He's asking a lot of questions. So far, so good. Like Red Bull or Racing Bulls, they have a very good impression of him. So they are trying to helping him all the way, because again, he's still a rookie. So you can basically see whatever happened last year between Mercedes and Antonelli. So we can actually expect something similar, more or less, a driver that might gonna have like a very good performance on a Grand Prix and everyone is going to put him on a pedestal, you know, or he can just have like a few weekends in a row that they're not going to be good. You have to learn. Formula One is not easy, especially this year.
100%.
Especially this year.
And I think that Racing Bulls has actually become a better environment for rookies now, that it just seems like a place where they really can learn. And you can see how Hajar flourished under Racing Bulls. You can see how Lawson flourished under Racing Bulls. And even at different times, Yuki as well. I mean, Yuki I personally think was a questionable driver. But I do think it isn't a bad team to come into. And, you know, they have a lot of experience at rookies. They do seem to be a little bit better now than they've been in the past of kind of how cutthroat it's been. I think the bigger question will be Hajar in his first year in Red Bull without Christian Horner, without Helmut Marko.
I'm excited for the end of the Helmut Marko era, I've got to say. Yay.
Yeah, right, you know, and is it going to be as cutthroat for him? Are they going to be, after two races, kicking him out? Are they going to give him more time? Are they, you know what I mean? It's a new car, a new seat, and technically, so, you know, is there going to be less expectation on him, or is it going to be like, no, you're in the big boy seat now, you've got to start performing? So that'll be, I think, be interesting to see what happens there. Or have they learned their lesson?
Look, I don't know. I can't imagine the culture changing dramatically at Red Bull Racing. They've always been that kind of team where it's our way or the highway and you don't have that long to prove yourself. But yeah, like I said, I'm really happy to see Helmut Marko leave. I was totally turned off him in Australia last year when he pretty much just belittled Isaac Hajar, who went out on his formation lap when the track was super, super wet and he crashed and just broke the poor kid's heart. Credit to Isaac Hajar. He bounced back and came back and performed well, you know, throughout the season, to the point now where he's been promoted to Red Bull from Racing Bulls. But the way that Helmut Marko handled that situation, I thought was highly unprofessional, mean, just mean and unnecessary. So I'm glad to see him gone.
Yeah, no, I would agree. He also just seemed to be coming out with comments all the time that just didn't make sense, or felt like a soundbite, or felt like he was just pushing buttons, but kind of in a moronic way. I mean, I don't know much about the man, but I just, you know, whatever your complaints are about Christian Horner, and I had a lot of complaints towards the end, you know, he still was very strategic and, you know, you did kind of like get the impression that he did still care about his drivers, but like Helmut Marko seemed, yeah, just out of it, out of touch.
Have you guys watched any of the Drive to Survive episodes that have just dropped?
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I've only watched episode one because my poor husband couldn't deal with another episode. And to be honest, I had a massive week in Sydney last week. I was at IMM, which is Australia's biggest travel media conference, with my travel writer's hat on. It was massively exciting and I made some awesome connections. And the good thing is that loads of the travel brands I met with had heard of the podcast. So that's yay. That was awesome. But Drive to Survive. Yes, I've forgotten that the whole crowd had booed Christian Horner at the Formula One launch at the O2 Arena. I just was like, oh, wow. Yeah, he was really a disliked man in his home country.
But it was such an arrogant move to go up there on your own. Oh. You know, why? Why didn't he go up with the four-time world champion? You know what I mean? It's just, oh.
I know. It was funny just that the cameras panning to Toto Wolff to Drive to Survive and Toto Wolff kind of rolling his eyes a bit. And look, Drive to Survive, I feel like, I guess I'm less excited about it this year than I have in the past because A, reliving Papaya Rules is making me twitch. I know it's going to feature in it. It has to feature in it. It was such a big part of last season. And I'm just like, oh, do I have the strength and the will to even go there again? But also the series feels different than it used to. Like it feels a lot more orchestrated. It feels a lot less spontaneous. And I like the spontaneity of it. I liked it when the cameras were picking up conversations that people didn't necessarily want picked up. But now everybody's so attuned to the Netflix crew in the paddock that they're a lot more guarded and things are a bit more set up and it just feels a bit more staged. So, well, that was last season and I expect this season will be exactly the same. Like, is it like that with the episodes that you guys have watched?
Yeah. I felt that way. And I felt they missed, like I felt last year, that they missed certain things that were key or even just nice moments. We've watched, I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but we've watched probably about 6 episodes. And yeah, the way they're structured, in my opinion, obviously they have to tell a story, but it just feels very orchestrated, in my opinion. I don't know if Simone, if you feel differently.
Oh yeah, especially like for the episode that we watched last night, just like we were very disappointed. It was an episode about Williams and it was mostly an episode about Carlos, what he achieved last year. I don't want to give out any spoiler, but yeah, I'm prepared to be a little bit disappointed by that episode because I think Carlos deserved more.
It was a good episode and it was a focus on Williams and it was great to see a focus on Williams and great to see a focus on Carlos. Like, poor Albon, got a bit in it, but it was very much about Carlos's decision to move to Williams. But there were certain elements of it that we felt there was more that could have been put in to really show. But anyway, look, I mean, we're also nitpicking because we're big fans of the sport and we know everything that happened last year. And that's the other thing that I really struggle with, Drive to Survive. I know what happened. I don't need to watch it again. You know what I mean? Like it, and the way Netflix tells it, I'm like, no, it didn't happen that way. You know, other things happen and you're missing that. And that I find a bit frustrating. And I agree with you watching Lando win again and again. God. 1 year was enough.
God, not again. No, but with your filmmaking hat on, Kira, you must watch Drive to Survive and go, I wouldn't do that. I would have cut that or I would have included this or... Yeah, maybe you should write to Box to Box production that made the series and
tell them what I think. There's definitely stuff that I feel like they missed out. But then I also know from my producer filmmaking hat that there's a reason why they did and they can't get everything in, et cetera, et cetera. But it did feel quite orchestrated in many ways and that was just frustrating, really. So
yeah, just feels a bit stale, doesn't it? I just remember all the scenes from last season, you know, Toto Wolff and Susie Wolff sitting on their balcony having a morning coffee. Like, please, it's just, please, God.
Yeah.
Give us, the viewers, some credit. We're way more intelligent than this. Anyway, that's how it feels sometimes. But yeah, so I guess that's the reason why, well, one of the reasons why, besides having an extremely busy week last week, I haven't rushed to watch every single episode of Drive to Survive because I'm kind of, I was really disappointed with last season's. I'll watch it and I will enjoy it and I know it'll be good, but it just won't meet my expectations because I want it to be like season one and it just never will be again.
Yeah. 100% agree.
Yeah, we haven't spoken about Williams properly yet as far as testing goes. I mean, they missed Barcelona, right, because their car wasn't ready. What's your take of Williams in Bahrain, Simone?
Well, I got to say they didn't look that bad. Like, considering the fact that they didn't show up in Barcelona because the car wasn't ready, to be honest, they did, like, quite a lot of laps. The Mercedes power unit didn't really give them any struggle. actually, the Mercedes Power Unit probably was giving more struggle to Mercedes itself than the satellite team. So I know that there are like some things that are probably late for Williams this year. They are not where they want to be at the moment. But when you see what they've done last year, in the middle of the season, they basically like they were reborn. They reached a point where they were like, okay, it's now we have to get our things together. And they actually did. Like, we collected two podiums. They scored a lot of points. They kept the fifth position. That was their target last year. And they actually made it. So in terms of expectation, I expect probably the same kind of performance as last year for Williams. I don't really expect them to do like something more than last year. I'd be happy to be proven wrong, yeah.
And then we've got Cadillac in the mix as well, which is just a totally unknown quantity, but with two great drivers, race-winning drivers. And interestingly, a fun stat I've just come across is that the only teams to have two race winners in their driver lineup are McLaren, Ferrari, and Cadillac. So there you have it. We're just going to have to watch this space. This is new this season, Formula One creators. I want to give a shout out to creators that you've been following or whose content you're loving at the moment. So very quickly, which F1 creator do you enjoy following?
This year, I'm actually really enjoying to look what Terry Widow, Coffee Corner Motorsport, is going to do with his channel. It's growing quite a lot. And one of the things that we're actually really proud of is that this year we have a strict collaboration with him, and he's also going to use our telemetry and our data to do his analysis. Shout out to Terry. Great work. Love to work with him.
And he's also really nice.
He seems really nice. I found him through you guys. Yes, I've just started following him as well. So yeah, shout out to Coffee Corner. If you're looking for another Formula One creator to follow, go follow him on Instagram and on YouTube. I'll put a link in the show notes as well. Well, for now, I want to give a big thank you to Simone Scanu for coming in and letting Kira and I ask you endless questions about the new regs and the season ahead. No wonder you built Formula Live Pulse. These are the sort of questions that you are usually hit with. Thank you so much for sharing your time and coming on the podcast. It's been a pleasure, and we'll get you back on sometime throughout the year.
Anytime. Thanks so much for the invite.
Our pleasure. And Kira, thank you for allowing your partner in life and business to come on and share all these insights with us. And great to see you again.
Have a good day. Ciao.
You too. Ciao. Oh, such a great chat with Simone and Kira talking about this season ahead. I'm so excited for Melbourne just because we really don't know what to expect. We haven't seen this new generation of cars racing before. Lots to look forward to. Now, before I go, a couple of quick updates. The Melbourne guide that I've written has been updated, and we've got all the Formula One activations, driver appearances, pop-up stores, that kind of thing in section 12 and in section 6, which is called Looking the Part, all about merchandise. Also, you can play along with Away We Go podcasts. Very simple, very easy podium finishes prediction, which is just a 1, 2, 3, who you think is going to finish on the podium. So you just register, pick your 1, 2, 3 for the race, and that's it. There'll be a leaderboard with points. It's intentionally designed to be simple because this season is complicated enough. But also on Formula Live Pulse, they have a 7-day free trial. So download the app and try it for Melbourne. For me, it really changed my Formula One viewing experience. And I'm not saying that because Kira is a co-host and I love working with those guys. I'm saying that because it just provides more depth into every session of every Formula One race. My favorite feature, as I've said in the past, is the real-time transcripts of the conversations between race engineer and drivers. It's a game changer, as well as all the split times for different sectors, all the tyre strategies, who's already pitted or who switched to which tyre, because you don't see every pit stop on the broadcast, right? So it's all there in the app. So yeah, download it, try it out for the Australian Grand Prix for free. Yeah, and let me know what you think. Also on the app, so you don't have to be a paid user, you can participate or play along with Pulse predictions. It's a little bit more sophisticated than my F1 prediction tracker, on Away We Go podcast?
From our side, you can predict the fastest of every session in terms of like practice.
Whoever wins the race,
you can predict the podium, fastest lap. Is it going to be a safety car or not? Or the amount of DNFs, these kind of things.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, if you guys have liked what you've listened to, please rate and review the show. Please subscribe. Hello, if you are watching on YouTube, because all those numbers and metrics really help. You can connect with us on all the social media apps. And if you'd like to drop us an email, you can at hello@awaywegopodcast.com. Other update I have, if you are in Perth, which is where I am today, you can go along and see Crofty and Ant at the Regal Theatre in Subiaco. They're doing a show the day after the Grand Prix. Come with your burning questions. I'm sure they'll take questions from the floor at some point. You can win tickets to the show on Away We Go podcast Instagram page. Just find the post in the feed. It's the pinned post at the top. Follow Away We Go podcast on Instagram. Tag a friend. That's all you have to do. Thank you, everybody, for having us in your ears. Until next week and until lights out.